Good morning. Welcome to The Morning Show. I'm Ron Fruit. It's our state legislative update today, and I think this is really a first for us because we have all four of our area state representatives with us today. State Senator Howard Markline is with us today, representing Wisconsin's 17th Senatorial District. State Representative Tony Kurtz is here, representing Wisconsin's 50th Assembly District. From the 49th Assembly District, State Representative Travis Tranel and State Representative Todd Novak from the 51st Assembly District. Gentlemen, welcome. It's good to have you here. Happy New Year. An important day, Howard, for you and the community. You're going to be holding a listening session today. I know there's a lot of interest in that, but you've been holding those throughout the entire district and will continue, won't you?
Right. So we had two listening sessions last week. Tony Kurtz and I were up in Mauston and Reedsburg last week, and we'll be here in Richland Center today at 11 o'clock, and then I go to Lancaster this afternoon, and then also not a listening session, but tonight I'm going to be in Lancaster to have a rural EMS summit, which we did those 4 years ago, and we kind of want to do the same thing and listen to input from our volunteer rural EMS units.
Those summits, certainly I want to talk about those a little bit, but let's define what a listening session is. For those who are going to attend today, what should they expect and how should they react or how should they participate?
So depending on the number of people, we may or may not have a time limit for people. If there's not many people there, then obviously they can talk probably quite a bit. And we do this because so that everybody has a chance to express their opinion on issues. Okay. So, and it's pretty much, it's a listening session, not a, people sometimes say, we want to listen, get their input. Okay. And so, typically don't engage debate too much on issues, but it's truly a listening session. And that's what we had, up in the last two we did last week with Representative Kurtz. And at the end, if there's time, obviously, we can talk, and respond to questions from the public.
But you'll be at the Richland Center Municipal Building in the council chambers from 11 until noon.
Correct.
That's the schedule
today. Yes. And I appreciate the mayor opening up the building today because, with Dr. Martin Luther King's holiday today, it normally is closed. And I certainly appreciate the mayor opening it up for us today. We have a really, really good mayor here in Richland Center. So. Is Todd listening?
Yeah, he's not about the Dodgeville mayor, but that's whatever works.
Certainly anticipate lots of people today, Tony, will be, providing input at UW Richland. But I also assume then that you had some unique aspects maybe in Juneau County and in Sauk County as well.
No, and like I said, this is a great opportunity for the public to come share their views. That's what we found in Mauston and Reedsburg, a lot of good comments. Obviously, we're heading into budget season very soon, and I know that's one of the focus of Senator Markline and I is, especially as we, help craft another state budget, what are your some current concerns, what are some investments you want to see us make, and Howard mentioned one earlier about EMS. I mean, that's something we're hearing throughout, particularly in our rural communities, the need for the funding for EMS, but just the good quality EMS that we have, we got to continue that. And that's where I think we need to promote, and I think we do a good job of promoting volunteerism. It's just we can never thank them enough for the hard work that they do for our communities.
Are these district-wide listening sessions, because your plan is to hold one in every county, isn't it, Howard?
It is.
A precursor to what you will do on joint finance as a part of the budget work for Wisconsin?
Yes, we wanted to make sure that we connected with our constituents before we start the budget process, which will begin probably about a month from today, when we get the governor's budget. Immediately after the budget address, the Joint Finance Committee meets to accept the governor's budget, and that begins the official budgetary process.
But then you'll have public hearings. That's different than what you're doing today, isn't
absolutely
it?
Yeah. The public hearings, again, we haven't decided how many we're going to do, but there'll be three, four-ish, I think, around the state. I don't know if we'll have any yet in our part of the state here. But we try to get to different geographic areas, certainly southeast Wisconsin, northeast Wisconsin, northwest, and hopefully western Wisconsin. So, and that's something we'll have to talk to the assembly about and see what their interest is as far as doing the public hearings. Those are public hearings. The format is actually kind of similar to our listening sessions too. There's a time frame, I believe, that we have for each person. Otherwise, because we have, those are hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of people show up, for those. That process will begin, probably, my guess is early April, end of March, early April.
State Representative Todd Novak is with us today. Todd, your first visit since the election. Let me give you a chance, first of all, to say Happy New Year, but at the same time, to look back, what you were pleased with that happened in 2022 and what some of your, key focuses and initiatives will be as we head into 2023.
Looking back, probably, I was reelected, so I guess that's a good thing. So, 2022... interesting year. As you know, we finished our session in the spring and then off to the election. So that's pretty been much my 2022. In the assembly, I'm chair of local government again. And so right now I'm working with shared revenue with Mr. Kurtz over here. And because that's a priority of mine, and probably stick in the lane that I usually do, working with local governments. I'm an ag committee too, which Travis is chairman of now. And so just, I like to do things that my district is related to my district, and so that's kind of the lane I'm going to stick in. So I tell you, after not being in Madison and for a few months and then starting to go up a couple days a week, it takes a while to get used to all that again, but it's good to be back.
Wearing your mayor's hat and the whole conversation of shared revenue, does it give you an opportunity to provide a perspective that maybe others do not have, Todd?
Oh, definitely. It's and when the local municipalities or the mayor or whoever calls, I know exactly what they're saying and talking. And actually, it's one of those cases, and we won't get it done this session, but the formula is so inadequate, the way it was built. It's a 1980s, 70s, 80s model. It doesn't really work. It's based on your property value, your wealth of your community, your poverty level. For example, in the city of Dodgeville, 5,000, we only get $283,000 a year in shared revenue, whereas other municipalities or cities half the size in my district that get in millions. So it's kind of a interesting formula. Someday somebody will tackle it. I don't think we'll get it done. It's kind of like the school funding formula. That's very old. That needs to be rewritten. But I don't think any of the four of us in this room are going to sit down and tackle that this year. So,
State Representative Travis Trano, welcome. It's good to have you on the program as well today. Glad you're here.
Always a pleasure to be in Richland Center.
Well, tell me a little bit about your look back at 2022 and your look ahead to 2023, Travis.
Sure. I think every year we get further past COVID is a good year. So I think most people would agree that 2022 was a pretty good year. In terms of agriculture, it was a great growing season. Prices are okay. Farmers are obviously struggling with input costs, and still there are supply challenges within the supply chain. But farmers are always optimistic, and I think that would speak well for our entire district in terms of 2022. It was a good year, but we're always looking forward, and 2023 is going to be even better.
When you think about 2023, will there be a focus you'll have as the chair of ag?
Well, we're always going to focus to make sure, as you're well aware and your listeners have heard me say several times, in Wisconsin, ag is a $105 billion business responsible for about 430,000 jobs. So there are a lot of people in Wisconsin that are directly tied to agriculture. And I often remind people that even if you're not, you still eat. So whether you realize it or not, you're all tied to agriculture. So we'll continue to focus and make sure that we have a climate where our farmers know that the work that they do is appreciated, it's valued. We'll make sure that they can continue to do it without too much over burden and overregulation, and again, just emphasize that we recognize the value that they provide to our state, because a lot of times I think farmers feel like people don't necessarily appreciate what they do, and in terms of state government, nothing could be further from the truth.
A common denominator with the farm today and many others is help finding labor, you know, and realizing it's also a national issue, but it certainly is for farmers throughout the 49th and beyond, isn't it?
Yeah, and I don't think farmers are any different than any other industry, honestly, and even government itself, whether you're a state agency or a private business, everybody is looking for good quality help, and it's no different in agriculture. Thankfully, there are some people that, you know, they still want to farm. It's in their blood. They enjoy doing it. And so there are people out there that are willing to put in the hours, work in cold, wet days in January like this. And we're thankful and appreciative of all those people, too. I think you bring up an interesting point, because everything is constantly changing, no matter what sector you're in. But today there might be a lot of people, farms don't look like what they looked like 10, 15, 20 years ago, but there are a lot of people that still work on farms. These farms are still operating, and we need those people, and we're thankful that they're there and they're willing to put in the work and the hours that it takes to feed all of us.
Howard, certainly one of the major local stories and emphasis has been UW-Richland since our last visit in December. Are there things that you can share, learned, input that you've received maybe that is noteworthy today?
Well, I mean, I've heard from a lot of people locally here very concerned about the, you know, the impact, and, you know, and I'm sensitive to you know, the feedback that I've gotten, but as far as anything that has really changed, I haven't heard anything from System or UW-Platteville that would indicate they're even contemplating a change in the direction, you know. So from that standpoint, I don't think, you know, there isn't like I can provide some hope at this point that, you know, things have changed from when we were here last month.
You know, the issue has been brought up that maybe legal action would be appropriate for the county. Is there, in your opinion, is that a logical or a viable opportunity?
I'm not an attorney. I don't know if, you know, I guess, you know, legal options are always on the table. But, you know, I have, you know, I've looked at a lot of data, you know, and stuff. And it's, you know, I mean, it's the... And I'm a numbers guy, and it was interesting looking at the some of the graphics. You know, when regionalization occurred, you know, it wasn't good for this campus. Certainly, you know, I mean, it was almost a lineal, you know, decline in the enrollment here. You know, so, and I don't know if that was intentional on the part of the System or byproduct of that decision, but you know, it's pretty clear that regionalization had a big impact here.
How about you, Tony?
I've heard the talk about legal action, and I guess that's entirely up to the folks here. It's just, to me, what kind of message are you sending? What, you know, if you want to work in good cooperation with one another, that might send the wrong message. And to Senator Marklines, you know, I've been looking at all the data the last several years, particularly when we talk about our two-year campuses. And unfortunately, statewide, our two-year campuses, their enrollment since 2012 to today is down like 60%. All the two-year campuses are feeling this. And unfortunately, the last closure was 1980. It was a campus up in Medford. And unfortunately, Richland is the next campus. And I've said this before, this will probably not be the last campus. I have got colleagues calling for me from Marshfield. They're saying, hey, could this happen to us? And when you look at the numbers statewide, it could. And because particularly if you look out, you know, 5, 6, 7 years from now, there's another big drop of students that will be graduating, that will be that pool of students that are going into, you know, higher education. And, you know, we met with the Tech College. They did their capital tour the other day and told us their needs. When you look at the technical colleges, you know, their enrollments are down, and Southwest Tech particularly. When you look at that time frame with UW-Richland and Southwest Tech, those enrollments have gone down too. So, you know, we need people. and unfortunately we're not having the families and the population growth like we've had in years past, and that's something I know we've all discussed about how do you promote this area, the good quality of life in this area, and that's something I think we all struggle with because we want more people, we need more people.
Travis, with your perspective from the 49th and UW-Platteville being in the heart of your district, is there a perspective that you share or maybe constituents have shared with you?
Sure. And to Tony's point, my wife and I, we had our five kids, so we tried to do our part. The rest of these guys could have stepped it up a little bit. Kind of feel like we're in a debate here. You have us sitting across from one another. You're the moderator. It's a very, usually you don't debate your friends. This could be funny. I think to your point, though, in your previous question, when you talked about the economy and everybody looking for work, I think we have to recognize that when you're in an economy like we currently are, where employers are begging for employees, there's just a lot of opportunity for young people. And I think that plays into some of these challenges that we have. There's a lot more pent-up demand for education when the economy is poor because people are looking for opportunity and you have to have education to seek that out. But now I constantly hear, it's kind of funny because when we started doing these, you know, many years ago, we would talk about, well, are we going to do that $15 minimum wage thing? And we said, oh, I don't know if we need to do that. We think the market will fix itself. You know, fast forward 10 years and now I constantly hear, well, I can make more money if I work at Quick Trip. And so the point being, there's just a lot of opportunity for young people, and some of them don't feel like they need a degree right now. In the future, I'm sure we'll get back to where they're going to want that. But all of those challenges, whether you're UW-Richland, UW-Platteville, UW-Madison, it all feeds in. They're all looking for people. And so I think change is, it's hard to accept, whether it's in agriculture, whether it's in local units of government, whether it's in higher institutions of learning. And I certainly can understand people's frustration and disappointment, and I'm very sympathetic to that. You know, I live 20 minutes from UW-Platteville, and from all of the people that I've spoken with there, none of them are happy with what's going on up here. They recognize the challenges that are being imposed on the community, and I think we all wish that we could come up with a different solution, but the reality is we just don't have enough students.
State Representative Todd Novak, let's talk about the governor's state of the state. What do you hope he addresses? What do you believe he should address as we await that from our governor?
Well, I know what he probably will address, but, you know, I think, as our speaker said, that he wants a reset. I believe that Governor Evers wants a reset. We, you know, the last 4 years have been kind of contentious, and I'm assuming this will be Governor Evers' last term. So I'm hoping he puts an olive branch out of things, because there are several issues that the governors and us in the Assembly Republicans and the Senate Republicans could probably work together on. But, you know, I don't hold out too hope when the first thing that he's pushing out is legalizing marijuana. I mean, I just don't kind of understand that. I'm sure he's going to throw a lot of money at pet projects and everything. And, you know, and more urban-based, as his past budgets are more towards the urban areas, Dane and Milwaukee, and, you know, kind of representing a rural area. Sometimes I'm not sure he understands what life is like out here, because it's just this concentration constantly of, if you look at follow the COVID money, federal money, where it all went, and pretty much 2-3 counties, and in here we sit. So one thing I hope he addresses, and we have to figure out a way and be on the same page to fix Milwaukee. There is a huge, huge problem over there on several fronts. And we can't keep kicking that can down the road. But it isn't a matter of just handing you money and saying, here. You know, there has to be benchmarks, strings attached, and everything else. Personally, I'm okay giving some more money to schools where we left off and things like that. So, but I don't hold out. You got to remember, every governor, even when I was there with Governor Walker, is more of a political state of the state or budget speech versus what the end product is. So people need to remember that, because I know it's going to happen. He's going to give his speech, and then my phone in my office is going to ring the next day. Well, you should do this, you should do that. And that's just the way the system is.
You mentioned marijuana. It's on my list this morning. Would you make a difference between medical marijuana and recreational cannabis?
Well, I support. I actually co-authored the medical marijuana bill the last two sessions. I support medical marijuana. I've talked to professionals. I've talked to veterans groups really support it because it does help apparently with PTSD and things like that. You know, it has to be a tight prescription, and so it's come, you know, it'd be totally controlled, where legalized marijuana is, you know, I can go out in your parking lot, you could sell it in your parking lot here and license and everything. And if you look at states, because I have, that have legalized marijuana, they're in trouble. Their tax revenue is not coming in like it was going to. The black market marijuana is thriving. So, you know, it's just the idea to me is just, it's just weird to legalize marijuana, tax it, and then give the tax money to the schools. Doesn't that just send a weird signal? We're sticking all this money into stopping kids from vaping and smoking and everything else, but yet we're going to legalize marijuana, take that tax, give it to the schools. I mean, it just, to me, that just doesn't make sense.
Howard, as you anticipate the state of the state, what do you hope to hear? What do you think should be heard by Wisconsin residents?
What I hope I hear, again, is solutions to problems that there's a reasonable chance that the legislature can be on board with that. You know, I hope it's not as partisan as some of the past state of the states have been, where, you know, it just, there wasn't a chance, you know, that the majority of his ideas were ever going to make it. You know, it just, you know, legalizing marijuana, for example, you know, and so I'm hoping there's more. I mean, we do have problems in this state that need attention, and, you know, and Todd talked earlier about the shared revenue issue, you know, and that's something that, and I want to give Representative Kurtz a lot of kudos on this. He's been working on that incredibly hard over the last, you know, month or 6 weeks or whatever. And we've got a meeting tomorrow morning with the majority leader and with the speaker, and Tony and myself will be in that meeting. And so, you know, I'm. I don't know if I'll take any bets on whether it happens, but there's certainly some very serious conversations going on, and that does include reforms in the Milwaukee area. I mean, the pension system in Milwaukee is broke. It is, and I've looked at their audited financial statements, and they're not pretty, and something has to change there. And, you know, we may wonder out here, why do we care about Milwaukee? Well, it's our biggest city. And unfortunately, as Milwaukee goes, in some cases, so goes, you know, the rest of the state. You know, when Milwaukee's thriving, you know, we tend to thrive out here as well. So, you know, I'm hopeful that maybe, you know, we can get something done on shared revenue and just, I guess, rural issues. Todd, you know, hit it on the head. I think even the last budget that the governor introduced was, it was a wonderful budget for Dane County and Milwaukee County. It was not real good for Richland County and Grand County and Iowa County, Sauk County, you know. So, you know, I'm hoping that, you know, he's more open to some of the issues we have out here. And, you know, and if you, you know, when you live in Dane County or live in Madison, it's just hard for people to relate to how we live out here, you know. And the expectation is that everybody in the rest of the state should live like they live in Madison, and we don't. So hopefully, you know, again, the governor is more realistic about, you know, some of the ideas. And I am encouraged. I mean, there has been some conversations that have occurred between legislative leaders and the governor, and that didn't even really happen in the past. So that's a good sign, I think, that there may be some cooperation between the governor and the legislative leaders.
Let me pose the same question to you, Tony. What are you looking forward to in terms of hearing of issues and issues you hope you hear about?
Well, kind of what Todd and Howard just mentioned, you know, we'll all sit there, you know, anxious to see what he has to say, see if, to Todd's point, if he puts that olive branch. And what Howard just said, you know, the Speaker of the Assembly, Speaker Voss, Robin Voss, 2 weeks ago actually sat down with the governor for an hour. I mean, that's the first time something like that's happened for over 2 years. So there's a lot of good progress toward that. Now what I'm going to caution people against is our last listening session in Mawson and Reedsburg, one of the things people kept saying, you know, we want you guys to get along. We want you to get things done. And I do think there's a misconception out there that all we do is fight, because my first session, we actually passed 94% of the bills had bipartisan support. This last session, over 90% of the bills had bipartisan support. The budget that we put together, the last two budgets, well, Governor Evers signed those budgets. So there's a lot of things that happen that, unfortunately, I think the media, and I don't put you in there, Ron, because you do. No, I'm being very sincere. You do a very good job of pointing out both sides. You're fair. You do a very good job. There's some, not so much. And that's where I think there's some media outlets that thrive on that division. And I think that's where the average person, they see all they do is fighting, but they don't see, believe it or not, there's groups right now working with the governor's office on this shared revenue. You know, is this something that you're interested in? Is this something we're interested in? So there's a lot of things that are behind the scenes that we don't, you know, we want to get something done. And I think, unfortunately, there's some that they thrive on that division, and our constituents see that, and they think, well, you're just not getting along. And there's some things we're not going to get along on, but there's a lot of things that we do that there, we can find a lot of common ground to move forward.
Travis, let me give you the chance to speak to the same.
What I would like to see is a realistic budget. I mean, the governor knows there are certain things that are non-starters for the Republican caucus, and he knows where there's middle ground where we could probably agree. The last budget that he introduced was so ridiculous that we jokingly had a conversation amongst ourselves if we should just pass it, because it was so out of line that he wouldn't even be able to sign it, and he would have to veto his own budget. So if he comes out and, you know, says he's just going to give everybody everything they want, obviously those numbers don't work. And so then it's not a serious document, and it's just a political statement. And so I'm hoping that's not what he does. My wife and I had a conversation. The governor obviously just got reelected, and it's no secret that, you know, he basically signed Howard and Tony's budget last time. When it came time for him to get reelected, he was sure happy to talk about that on his TV commercials and his radio commercials. So in an ideal world, he'd come out and say, hey, you Republicans, you make me look pretty good. So let's work together, and maybe we can keep this momentum moving forward. I don't know if you watched at his swearing-in ceremony. Unfortunately, his tone was pretty partisan again. And in defense of the governor, it's inside baseball. The governor himself is a pretty decent guy. He's a very nice guy. I would let him watch our children. I played euchre with him. I'd play pickleball with him. But the people that he has that sort of run the show are not cut from the same cloth. And so if the governor writes his own address, it might be different than if he just reads what somebody wrote for him. And so hopefully he does it himself, and then I'll be a little bit more optimistic.
This is the Morning Show. Glad that you're with us. State Senator Howard Markline and State Representatives Tony Kurtz, Todd Novak, and Travis Trandle are our guests today. It's our State Legislative Day on the Morning Show. State Senator Howard Markline, State Representatives Travis Trandle, Todd Novak, and Tony Kurtz are all in the studio with us. Howard, when we think about budgets and numbers and so forth, can a flat tax gain any traction in the state legislature? Are there things that you would rather do and that you would see done?
Well, the idea of a flat tax is being discussed. That bill was circulated, I think, last week sometime. Concept of a flat tax, I support. I think that the states, you know, Illinois to ourself has one. Not that there's too many things in Illinois I want to follow, but But it's simple, you know. And I think that, you know, it's something that we can maybe strive to do. Obviously, it's got to be a very long-term transition to that, if it's, it ever has a chance. Politically, you know, I mean, that involves, I mean, our top rate, you know, is over 7% now. And a lot of individuals, a lot of small business owners are taxed at a pretty high rate in Wisconsin that they're not taxed, you know, again, in Illinois. You know, if you're an LLC, partnership, S-Corp, you know, small businesses, all that income flows through to your personal return. So, you know, so it makes some sense from a job creator standpoint that we might go to that down the road. So I will not, and I told the majority leader this, who authored the proposal, I'm not going to co-sponsor that bill, and I won't co-sponsor any idea, any spending idea, any tax proposal. I support the repeal of the personal property tax, and we've talked about that many times in the past on your show, Ron. But again, in isolation, any one of these things sounds good. I believe my job as co-chair of finance is to, I got to make sure that everything makes sense, okay? That we can afford it not only in this biennium, but also in the next, you know, 2-4 bienniums down the road. So there's going to be conversations about it, and we'll just have to see how it goes.
Can the sales tax, Tony, be a source of property tax relief or not?
You know, when we've been talking a lot about shared revenue today, and just let your kind of listeners understand what shared, obviously the state collects sales tax, and then we as a state, we distribute that back. And what Todd was talking about was that formula. That formula was basically dated back to 2008 or 2001, and it really looks at growth. In other words, if you were a growing community, you did a lot better under that.
The net new construction.
Correct. The net, the growth. And so the concern is, for particular our rural areas, we're just not growing. You know, like Dane County, yeah, they've got good growth. Some of the suburbs around Milwaukee, they got great growth. But when you look in the rural Wisconsin, we don't have growth. And so that formula, to Todd's point, has been so out of whack that that's one of the things we're looking at, is how do you somehow rebalance that, help those communities like a Richland County, you know, like a Sauk, like a Juneau, that don't have that growth but still have all those needs. And like Travis was talking about, the inflationary pressure has affected everything, just like it affected, you know, your home pocketbook, but it also has affected our local government. But as far as property tax relief, I do think, particularly in the inflationary pressures right now, our area, as you well know, Ron, we have a lot of people that are on fixed incomes. Anything we can do to help with property tax relief, I think I'm all for, because you know, especially those inflationary pressures have really hurt those people that are on fixed income. So
one of the things, Travis, we've heard a considerable amount about is the desire to have cash bail reformed, give the people of the state of Wisconsin a chance to weigh in on a constitutional amendment. How do you feel about that, and what should we as citizens be most concerned with, in your opinion?
Sure. So the bail measure that'll be on the spring ballot will be a constitutional change. So the way things work in the state of Wisconsin, in order for the Constitution to be changed, the idea or the proposal has to pass two consecutive sessions of the legislature in identical form, which is great because the legislature could change from one session to the next. So both legislatures would have to agree that, hey, this makes sense. So right there, it's a pretty high bar to climb. And then the part I like the most is the final step is it has to go to the public, and the public also has to agree. The idea with the bail proposal is that a judge would be able to take into consideration someone's prior convictions. Right now, they're not supposed to be able to do that. So to me, that makes a lot of sense. If somebody is accused of committing a crime and the judge looks at their past record and sees that they were convicted of doing this or a whole onslaught of previous crimes in their life already, that there's a pretty good chance this person might be a high risk to society. Maybe we should set the bail pretty high so that he's not a risk to other people. And I think that makes a lot of sense. We're set to be on the floor in the assembly later this week, and we will pass that for the second time. Hopefully the Senate will do the same thing. I think the assumption is that they will. And then in April, that will be on the ballot. And we're going to have a state Supreme Court race that'll be on the ballot this spring, too. It's a lot of times people pay attention to the fall elections, but the spring elections are equally as important, if not more important. So hopefully your listeners would take some time out of their day to sort of research and see what they think about the bail issue and who they're going to vote for the Supreme Court. But you were talking earlier about, you know, just the state of where we are as a government and as a society, and it's easy to be down and out and think that there are a lot of problems, but the reality is the beauty of this country is that we all get to vote. We all get to have a voice in the process, and so hopefully your listeners are as excited to vote this spring as they were last fall.
Does the reform of bail discriminate against those who are poor in society, or some of those challenges, in your opinion, Travis?
In my opinion, I don't really think that it does, because you're just looking at past convictions. So you could be accused of a crime, and if you're found innocent of that, that would not be taken into consideration, only if you were convicted. So you've already had all your due process. You've already had access to representation, because that's another beautiful part about this country. If you cannot afford one, one will be provided for you. So I don't really buy into that. Whether you're rich or poor or whatever, if you've committed a crime, it's on your record. It could be taken into consideration. To me, that's another point where we sometimes people try to make political issues out of issues that, quite frankly, shouldn't be. So to me, it's an excuse. It's not a legitimate claim or concern.
If we really reduced it down, is it in essence a chance to protect the public as opposed to making sure someone shows up again in court?
That would certainly be my look, because bail, as you well know, is just a guarantee that somebody shows up in court and doesn't flee. And so, again, if you're a criminal that's already been convicted of a crime in the past, the chances of you being guilty, I would argue, are probably higher, and the chances of you reoffending are probably higher. And I think that it would make sense to keep that person off the streets. And I'll also say, a lot of these things, we're so fortunate that we live in rural areas. I know there's a, we talked about it earlier, there's often a big disconnect between how people live in Dane and Milwaukee counties versus out here, and everybody there thinks that we should live like they live. And, you know, I couldn't disagree with that more. I love living in a rural area. I am so thankful to be able to raise my kids in a rural area. I try to instill values in our kids where hopefully they appreciate where they're raised, and they want to raise their kids in a rural area, because I don't want to have to drive 4 or 5 hours to see my grandkids. Even when we talk about growth, growth can be good, but in my rural area, I don't want a lot of growth. I want to maintain what we have. I'm so appreciative of how we're able to live. And so, quite frankly, this bail issue is not even really a big issue out in rural Wisconsin, but it is a huge issue in more urban parts of our state.
Representative Todd Novak, I know that as we begin a new session, there will be bills that will be redrafted. Is there one on your priority list or two that you hope to bring before, again, the Wisconsin legislature?
You know, you really stumped me there. I was so in awe of Travis's speech that I think if I lived in his district, I'd vote for him.
Now who's sucking up to who?
I got to take a look. I know the ambulance stuff that Howard was talking about, that Travis and Howard worked on very hard, that got vetoed. I think bringing that back. I don't, just take a look. I'm always doing water bills, water quality stuff, and so I'll be working on some of that. And, you know, right now we're in this stage of, we've only been back 2 weeks, sworn in 2 weeks ago, and sort of, you know, just kind of, okay, what's the agenda? How are we doing this? What are you going to do? So I've got a few bills in the pipe that I want to look at and bring back, and some senators have reached out to me about going on bills with them or looking at some different things. So, and the three or four of us will probably put some stuff out together, so we got to to sit down and talk about that. So, yeah, I mean, like I said, we'll just see the lay of the land. I want to wait and see what the state of the state address looks like, the budget looks like, and kind of get a feel for there. Some of, you know, some things can get put in the budget, and other things, you know, instead of a bill. Mm-hmm. So, so look at. Look at that. Howard shaking his head no.
No means yes.
My budget person is Tony Kurtz, so I don't have to deal with it. No, I'm just kidding. So, yeah, the four of us will be sitting down. We work very well together about what we need for Southwest Wisconsin. I'm sure we'll be rolling out some things that we need. So,
how about you, Howard? Are there some priorities for you in the redrafting category?
Well, we're going to have a new budget. That's my top priority, obviously, is to get that done. A couple, you know, the rural EMS and then rural broadband, those were two bills that got vetoed last time. And, you know, with rural EMS, we're doing these summits. Nothing's going to happen. I want to wait and hear the feedback and see where our volunteers are at before we do anything there. But that's on my radar. And then rural broadband, you know, we... There's over $1.1 billion of federal money coming into the state, which we're probably not going to have a whole lot of control over. But I've talked to the providers, and they would love to have the reforms that we did in the last bill that was vetoed. So they're talking to the governor to see if he would reconsider. So we're going to kind of wait and see what the feedback is from the governor's office. On whether that's even an option at this point. But given the amount of federal money coming in, the providers have told me, as far as new money, new state money, no, please don't. We got so much on the books right now. And but one thing I was going to mention on rural broadband, sometimes I hear feedback from people, you're taking credit for all this projects being done with federal money. It's not the case. That's state money that's going in locally here. That's all state money that we've approved in the past budgets that is flowing through the PSC and being awarded in grants out here.
One of the things that's really, I think, concerned you, Howard, is people being able to renew professional licenses. That may not be the right terminology, but if I'm a doctor or a nurse or somebody else in a professional realm, getting a license, there's been lots of challenges.
It's terrible. We met with the acting Department of Safety and Professional Services secretary a few weeks ago, and he talked for a long time about how wonderful everything was in the agency. And when he concluded his pats on his own back, we pulled out a spreadsheet of every one of our constituents that was waiting for a license, the date they applied, and the status of it. And he was shocked. He had no idea that what was going on. And it was, and some of this stuff, and part of the problem is they're not working in the building. They're working remotely. And we've had cases like somebody graduates from college on May 15th, 2022. They put that on their license application. The registrar sends the data to DSPS with the transcripts, and it says May 22nd, 2022. Okay, clearly this person graduated in May of 2022 with all the required coursework. The state said, well, the dates don't match. Therefore, they put that application on hold for months. And to me, that's just, you know, anybody, again, if you had a human being looking at the application, you see how, you know, it should be approved, you know. So, but, you know, that's just one example that we had from one of our constituents. And I think that was a nurse practitioner, which we certainly need out here, you know, so in healthcare. So, yeah, we're going to, you know, we're looking at that. And we just need to kind of shine a light on that agency and say, hey, what's going on? We got people, you know, what's sad is these people that want to work. They want to work. They want to treat their patients or go to work. And earn money, pay taxes, and they can't do it. And that's sad.
We've heard a lot about TikTok, and the governor has put a TikTok ban in place. Is that something that you agree with, Tony?
Oh, wholeheartedly. You know, it's kind of ironic you brought that up. I actually, myself and Senator Julian Bradley actually had a bill drafted. And we were in, talked a lot to Congressman Mike Gallagher. Mike Gallagher was the lead congressman in the House representative that brought that bill up. And so I'm glad that the governor did that. He actually, I think it's a good thing. People don't really understand that TikTok. You know, it's obviously owned by a Chinese company, and they truly are collecting your data. And it's not necessarily concerned for us because, but you know, if you got a 16 or a 14-year-old that's on TikTok and gathering all that data throughout the life of that young lady or young man, that's a lot of information that they're going to have, and they can target that person's, what that person believes in, what's that person's fears. And so it's a good step forward. Now, I'm not going to sit here and kid you. I'm a little concerned he didn't include the UW system in that. I am a little baffled by that. I think, you know, UW system, you know, I think they should have been part of that ban as well. So, but I am glad he did that. I think it's very prudent.
Travis, as you think about the upcoming year, are there some bills that you especially want to put in the hopper and be able to redraft from your point of view?
Yeah, before I get to that, though, I thought Tony was going to say that him and Julian made a TikTok, and that would have been, I don't have TikTok, but that would have been, I'd have maybe had to download it and try to view that, because that would have been something to see. I do want to say, too, though, again, I talk to my wife a lot, I guess, because we were having another conversation and it came up on the radio that the governor was proposing to get rid of TikTok on government devices. And she's like, well, yeah, you know, that might make sense for them. But like people, my wife uses TikTok. I don't even use Facebook anymore. But she's like, what does it matter if the average person has TikTok on their phone? And I reminded her, when you download those apps, when you click that agree to their terms, you're usually turning over your entire phone, your pictures, your contacts, your tracking data, so they can tell where you go. So they might not be looking at you specifically, but in 10 years, if you get a job, they'll be able to tell, okay, this person hangs out with this person. They usually go there. They talk about this. They can sync up your microphone on your phone. It's a very, very big deal. And so I'm glad the governor did that, and I'm glad Tony is working on it.
To give an example there, wasn't it like journalists being able to follow those who were critical?
Exactly.
Of that
they can
so
tell who your friends are. They can tell your travel habits. They can tell where you stay. It's a big deal to everybody, even though most people probably think my life's pretty boring. It doesn't really matter. It does matter. But back to your original question, opportunities moving forward. I think it's no secret there's going to be some sort of tax package. I'm hoping that we can make sure that rural areas benefit from that. Town roads are always important to me, making sure that local units of government get more money. I think there's a lot of opportunities moving forward, especially if the governor is more willing to communicate and have dialogue with the legislature.
Thinking about it from an ag perspective, is there a bill there that you feel that, you know, might come from your office?
Lots of things. We've had good success with water quality issues. Tony is indicating to me right now that there may be ample opportunities to support ag. In conversations with him and Senator Mark Klein, there's always opportunities, and I'm willing to take them.
So, Ron, what is on your hit parade for 2023?
You know, I haven't really decided.
Okay.
Yeah. I gave you an idea, Ron.
Other than the fact that I think just want to step back for a moment, take a breath and say, where can I best use, you know, what I'm going to do and sure. So forth. Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm going to interject here. You can cut me off anytime you want, I guess, here. But
would this be a good time?
No, it wouldn't be. No, thank you. But we all appreciate what you do for our community. You're connected to the community. You're one of us. You know what I mean? And I listen to you and Phil every morning, and it's I love the laughs that you give us, and all the stories, you know, and stuff is great. So anyway, we've got a couple things here for you. One is a commendation from the Wisconsin legislature, which I'm going to take the liberty of reading here. Know you by these presents, whereas Ron Fruit first signed onto the air at WRCO in Richland Center in 1972, rearranging his high school schedule so he could work at the station. And whereas Ron has been the voice of WRCO for 50 years, working as farm director, then program director, and on December 1st, 1994, becoming co-owner of the station with his wife, Beth. And I saw Beth out here a few minutes ago. Whereas Ron had to ensure the operation of WRCO even when Beth went into labor with their first child. The station had dropped off the air. Ron had to run up to the transmitter to get the station back on the air before taking her to the hospital. And whereas Ron's focus has been on serving Richland Center and the surrounding towns and villages, his mission has been to, quote, leave your community better than you found it, unquote. And whereas Ron has been recognized by his peers, joining the Wisconsin Broadcasters Hall of Fame in 2014, and whereas Ron will sign off for the final time on January 31st, 2023, and he and Beth plan to take some time to visit family, now, therefore, the members of the Wisconsin State Legislature, on the motion of Senator Howard Markline, Representative Tony Kurtz, Representative Travis Tranel, and Representative Todd Novak, do hereby thank Ron Fruit for his many years of service to our community. And that's dated January 16th, 2023, and signed by the four of us here. So thank you, Ron.
Thank you.
We appreciate your
all you've done
for us.
To all four of you. Yeah. It's been really a joy to be able to work with you and those who've come before you. I think back to, you know, many conversations in years past. Senator Kruhl and Representative Bob Travis. Was he any relation to you?
Nope.
In any way, shape, or form, but from Grant County. And that's one of my big memories was that he actually said he wasn't going to run for re-election on the program, and his office staff called and said, did he really say that? So it was one of the few scoops I had in my entire life, you know, that way. So, but thank you. Thank you sincerely. Appreciate what you do, and best wishes as you continue to do.
Yeah, if I can just weigh in there, too, I want to thank you and congratulate you, because when we talked about one of the benefits of living in rural communities, obviously being from southern Grant County, anytime I'm up here, when I can flip to your station and hear your voice, it just makes us all feel like we're home. Mm-hmm. And there's just something about living in a small community and people having the opportunity to know the person on the other side of the radio. I hope as the station moves forward, I hope we can keep that, because that's one of the uniquenesses about living in a rural area. And it's just been wonderful to see you provided such a service to the community that honestly, I don't think words can really do it justice, but I hope you know the value that you've provided and just the way that you were able to increase people's quality of life just by being a soothing voice and somebody that they could hear and trust and know. So thank you, and enjoy your retirement.
Thank you very much.
I'd like to thank you too, Ron. And I'm coming from a newspaper career for 25 years before I got in this job. I started the newspaper in 1990, and the owner of the paper said to me, if you're going to cover local government and the community, you have to be part of the community in order to do a good job. And also, never let your reader or listener or whatever know your opinion on an issue. It's your job to ask the questions. You remind me of old school, the way I was taught, and you are part of the community, and you do a great job, and you are so highly respected up here. As I was teasing you before, you should run for office.
For the Senate, though.
I will know, I'm very sympathetic to Beth, so I don't
know
you're
saying no. You're not running for the Senate.
I have a feeling you're not going to be staying home too long. Beth isn't going to.
Suitcase is already packed.
Thanks to the four of you. It's a privilege to have all of you here today. First time ever that we've had everybody in the same room at the same time. So what a treat. And Howard, I want to make sure that we leave people with a reminder that 11 o'clock. Now, you, Tony, and Travis are going to be there?
Yes.
At the City Municipal Building?
Yes, 11 o'clock.
So until noon. So yes. People can come and share their thoughts on any issue. Sounds good. Thank you.
All right.
Thank you sincerely. Thank you. And thank you for listening to the program today.